Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in the Standard, 4-star review in the Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, guys. Welcome to another surprise bonus rehearsal. This one coming from Hull City Hall with the amazing Graham Fellows, a.k.a. John Shuttleworth, a.k.a. Jilted John, and many other things beside that, as you are going to discover. Listen, if you like these podcasts, please support us in any way you can. Just telling your friends about the podcast will be a massive help. The more listens we can get, the better it is for us. Also, you can, of course, become a monthly badger. Go to gofasterstrike.com/badges. For £3 or more a month, you can get loads of extras, including backstage videos, lots of other bits of video footage that you can't see anywhere else. You get advance warning of who the guests are going to be. You get entered into a monthly draw. You get ad-free audio of the podcast, if that's what you're into. Loads more stuff besides. It's just brilliant. Plus a little membership card and some badges and a secret code you can talk to each other with. It's beautiful. And all the money from that goes to making more podcasts. So if you've enjoyed these podcasts over the years and would like us to do more, then please help us in that way if you can. Or just come and buy a ticket. Go to richherring.com/gigs. You can see that I'm in London, Norwich and Birmingham in 2020 so far. There will be more gigs added, I am sure. It's been really good fun on tour. Thanks so much if you did come along to see that. All right, let's say goodbye. I love you all. Thanks for listening to this introduction. Now it is time to listen to Rahalastapa with Graham Fellows. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hull City Hall. Please welcome a man who was born in Pocklington, and thus everyone in this audience is his sworn enemy. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much! Hello, Hull! Oh, how lovely to see you all. Thank you for coming along. Brilliant to be here. We're all from the East Riding of Yorkshire. We have to get on now. We have to put the past behind us. William Wilberforce belongs to us all. That's the thing to remember. Welcome to the show. This is a podcast. It's called Rockfish, Halibut, Lamprey, Sardine, Trout, Pollock. They love fish here in Hull, so I just made it very much. Better come up with new ideas for podcasts. This is just... Do you like the way I made H stand for halibut, not herring there? That was my favourite bit. About 50% of the audience are here because they love fish so much here. They actually thought Richard Herring was just a fish that had come, gained enough sentience to be able to talk. Thought, great, we'll see a fish doing some comedy. Very disappointed people in the audience. It's lovely to be in Hull. King Charles I was refused access to Hull, leading to the Siege of Hull, the first action of the Civil War. Ironically, if they'd just let him have a look, he'd have just gone, yeah, it's shit, let's go home. You always want something you can't have, that's the thing, isn't it? Go, oh, that wasn't worth it. Lots of facts about Hull I've got for you. The George Hotel in Hull claims it has the smallest window in England. That is the best thing about Hull. They've got a very small window. It's not even definitely the smallest. Just claimed that it's a slit, really. It doesn't even count. That's all you've got. People from Hull like to be referred to as Hullensians. Sadly, nobody calls you that. I'm sorry. You might like to know that I've never heard of that in my life. Well, twats, we call you twats. The most famous inhabitant of Hull was Robinson Crusoe, who set sail from Hull in the beginning of his book. He's a fictional character. That is the most famous. It's not even real. And yet you still have a plaque to him up in Queen's Gardens that he doesn't exist. You could make a bit more of it. If there was a Tales of Robinson Crusoe experience here in Hull, I would definitely go and visit it. I didn't do the bit that I meant to do. I was hanging out on the fish trail, and a carp on Aldred Gelder Street said he calls it Rehullestapa. I forgot to do that. That's the money shot. We'll move it around in the edit. It'll look amazing. And what else have I got for you? Hold on. Wrong page. I'm sure these things were invented in somewhere else in Yorkshire where I went, but apparently Lemsip, Bonjela and Gaviscon were all invented in Hull by a very ill person. That's just the kind of... They had to be invented. Necessity is the mother of invention. There's a lot of mouth-ulcered, ill people shitting themselves. Have to invent that. In World War II, 90% of Hull was destroyed by the Nazis. So it wasn't all bad, was it? They weren't all bad. Just 10% off. And that's all I have for you. Thank you for coming. Right, some hell facts. I wrote those in the dressing room. I hope you enjoyed them. I drove myself up today, so I'm quite impressed that I managed to get those in. Now my guest this week. Remember, there's just one guest. Come back next week if you want. He's probably best known as the character St. John from the brilliant sitcom, the world's best sitcom of all time, Time Gentlemen Please. Yeah. Will you please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, it's Graham Fellows! Graham Fellows! Cindy! There he is. There's a microphone on your seat. Don't sit on it. Pick it up. It's right behind you. It's, right. Okay. It's just on you. It's just on the seat there.
An SM58. That's what I like to see. Yeah. I played this theatre about 20 years ago. It was only slightly fuller.
Right, that's good.
Yeah. Oh, good echo.
Yeah, so that is the thing. From up here, it echoes. It'll sound all right at home, but
oh, okay.
I find it quite difficult. I've been playing a lot of cavernous venues, I have to say, on this tour. Right. And we've overstretched ourselves, it's all full up there. Just don't look up there.
So you don't have audience mics.
I find the echo. If we talk at the same time, I can't hear what you're saying.
Sorry, Richard.
No, it's all right, but that's a problem.
No, I'm just saying, how are you going to get the sort of dead sound required for a podcast?
Well, it'll work. The guy, George, the incompetent sound guy back there that you've met, he will sort that out. He was very excited to come to Hull. He usually have a different guy come on tour, but he couldn't do it. And they asked George, and George said, I've always wanted to come to Hull. It's like 40 years old. He could easily have come to Hull. He was that excited about it, but he never has done. So he's very excited to be here. He used to have a poster of Hull on his bedroom wall
Yeah?
He showed it to me.
Who's George?
That guy back there, the guy we've met. You met
oh,
him.
Oh, yeah.
It's George. He's incompetent. He filmed us with an iPhone, hopefully. What do you remember about appearing on Time, Gentlemen, Please? Do you remember that sitcom?
Does anybody here remember that sitcom?
Yeah,
it was. I thought it was quite good.
It was quite
good. We were just talking about it backstage, yeah. And you said you had to suddenly write 10 extra episodes in like a day, and you thought they were better than the ones that were taking you ages.
I had to write 10 in 10 weeks, basically, so yeah. I had to write one a week. So, yeah, I chanced across one of our episodes. I think there was the hospital on the second time you were in, you were in two.
That was the second time, yeah. It was great. There were really good actors like Phil Daniels working on it and Julia...
Sawala.
Thank you for saying her surname. and you played the postman, and I played St. John's ambulance driver, and it was, well, to be honest, it probably came at a good time because I've been doing John Shuttleworth incessantly for probably 10 years, and it was like a sudden little break from that.
I mean, you started off in acting, or you were aiming to be an actor, and you've done various bits and pieces of acting over the years.
Well, I was an actor. Yeah, I went to Manchester Poly School of Theatre.
Yeah.
Which had some quite famous people went there. Julie Walters, Bernard Hill. A few years after me, Steve Coogan went when the standard had slipped. but it was a good drama school. It was a method school.
Right.
You know what that means?
Really? I do. It means you have to sort of live the part, don't you?
Yeah.
If you're playing a fat guy, you have to eat lots of pies. I've been methoding that one for a while.
That's it.
Haven't yet had the part.
Yeah, I was in an Ibsen play called Brand, and I remember going onto the moors and getting very cold.
Right.
Because he was up in the Alps in Norway getting very cold.
Yeah.
And I got a cold, and then I couldn't do the play. Well, I just made that up, but I got a laugh. No, it's true. I did go in the moors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you got, but well, I'm very, I was a big fan as a youngster of Jilted John, which sort of exploded onto the pop scene.
Yeah.
Which I don't think many, I think a lot of people don't realise that John Shuttleworth and Jilted John are played by the same person. I mean, it's quite...
A lot of people don't realise that Jilted John is called Jilted John. They call it Gordon is a Moron.
Right.
Perhaps it could have been called that, but it just seemed a bit of a dumb title, whereas Jilted John by Jilted John seemed quite minimal and cool.
Yes.
And we were trying to be cool in a bizarre way. I mean, I was at drama school, 1977, and there was a guitar sitting around in the canteen, and a lot of being a method school, it was sort of about breaking you down. So a lot of the first year was sort of doing menial jobs like sweeping the stage and hanging around. And so I saw this guitar, and I just picked it up and couldn't play the guitar at all, but I tuned it to an open chord. Do you know what I mean by
that? I do.
No, because nobody goes down. It's not a chord, and you have to do fingering. But if you tune it to a chord, you just put your finger across the frets, like you would in a steel guitar. And it's dead easy then. So I just went... Duh, 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 and suddenly I thought, hey, that's quite a good riff. And then I went... Duh, 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 and I had the song.
Yeah.
And in one lunch hour, I wrote it.
Yeah. It's very much like the creation of Yesterday, isn't it? It's very much like the creation of Yesterday by Paul McCartney. He dreamt that tune, and you just picked up a guitar.
I think he should have stuck with Scrambled Eggs.
Scrambled Eggs.
Because that's a much better lyric than Yesterday, isn't it?
Yeah, that might be John Shuttleworth talking.
It's one. It might be, but it's not. Yesterday is one of my least favourite Paul McCartney songs. It's very self-conscious. He's trying to write a great classic.
Yeah. He dreamt it. He didn't. He can't help it.
Yeah, but if he'd stayed with Scrambled Eggs, he could have talked about all the problems of scrambling and...
Yeah.
They didn't have a microwave then. That's the way to do it now, isn't it?
Yeah. So how did it go from you picking up a guitar at drama school to you being on Top of the Pops and getting to number 4 in the hit parade? I mean, that's sort of... Well, it was incredible journey, isn't it?
It was in combination of luck and arrogance, I would say. Because I honestly thought it was really good. And you've got to remember that the time the music industry was so different. It was a time that the Baron Knights were still having hits.
I remember them.
Parodying songs in the charts. So parody songs, comedy songs were quite popular and would get played by DJs. So I wrote this song, and I remember going to make the demo, and I had 25 quid in my hand because my friend who accompanied me found the studio, said, it's about 25 quid. And it was 80 quid. But the guy was so shocked that he just went, give it here. So he let me have the tape for 25 quid. And then I just walked into a record company in Manchester, the only one that I could find. It was the only one, Rabid Records, and then Factory Records that people will have heard of, that appeared a little bit later. And I just walked in with my tape. They were sitting around drinking coffee. That's not very punk, is it? they were a punk label. And we put it on, and they went, oh, that's quite good. And then about a month later, we were recording it in Oldham. And we did things that were a bit naughty. We wrote letters to DJs pretending to be fans.
Right.
You're not supposed to do that. but, you know, it's of its time. Like and the charts, you know, even going into record shops, buying a copy.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. Certain people did that.
Right.
But everybody did that. That's why I'm happy to admit that, because that was the way the charts, they had chart return shops where only a few shops comprised the charts. But, I mean, I think it came out in July and it captured the imagination of every seven-year-old in the country.
Yeah.
So they and most people, you know, young people thought, wow, this is a bit different.
Yeah.
And I guess it was, because it was more or less the first song I'd ever written. And the structure of it is bonkers. You know, the chorus, Gordon is a Moron, happens once. And then it just goes on with this kind of coda of just the chord repeating it with this rant.
Yeah.
It's so upset, yeah, yeah. I want to smash his face in. And it's weird.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what made it special.
Well, watching it again today, it sort of struck me it's quite Rick from the Young Ones. It's like you're Rick, you know, the persona.
Think you mean the other way around?
Well, I do. I mean,
Rick,
you know,
copied me.
Exactly. Yeah. I do. I do mean that. I think there's a certain timbre to the way he speaks, the way you speak, and what then followed, you know, and that idea of that being that slightly nerdy guy trying to be cool.
Yeah.
It's similar,
but I was doing I have to be fair. It was a parody of a punk song.
Yeah.
To start with. Because I was a part-time punk, you know. I used to take my earrings out at night. But I thought punk was okay, but I thought there were a lot of silly things in it.
Yeah,
like people going, here we go, 2, 3, 4, and all that, halfway through the song. You know. So that's where that came from.
But that's the best. That's the best bit in the song. I know, there's a lot of good bits.
It is really good.
It's really good. The song is solid. In fact, I remember listening to the album at Jeff Quigley's house, sitting on Jeff Quigley's bed. There was a whole album of songs. The one about Going Steady was that the B-side of...
Well, that was nearly the A-side, but it was John Peel on Radio 1 who picked up the A-side, and that therefore became... It was like a double A to start with.
Because that's a good... There were some good songs on that album.
Yeah, did anyone see my tour last year as Jilted John? Yeah! It was good, wasn't it? That was very cathartic, because, you see, I'd never toured as Jilted John. I went straight back to drama school, having had this massive hit aged just 19. And I went back to drama school thinking I'd be really cool and not, be a pop star.
Yeah.
And went straight back into method acting. And I think I always felt a sense of loss that I'd never really capitalised on it. So last year we went out and did a big tour. And we didn't come to Hull, did we? Did we? No.
Where did we good come choice. To?
But no, we did about 10, 12...
They'll only come and see stuff if you come here.
I mean, I lost about $2,000 on the tour.
Oh, did you?
It was a big success.
Yes.
And, because normally I'm just on my own, like yourself, Richard. I have a keyboard and I have a kit bag and my own microphone. But it's very minimal.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can make money touring. But if you've got a big band and you have to hire a van and book travel lodges...
Yes, yeah.
Suddenly becomes very expensive.
It does.
But I had a lot of fun, and it was very cathartic to get up at age 59 and sort of pogo and be silly. And
But it's also, it's sort of within, it's right as well, isn't it? Because he would come back and come back to the character would do it as well.
Well, there's a lot of them doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, but having never done it before, I and when I did Top of the Pops, I just sort of stood at the mic like a sort of rub it in the headlights a bit. That was the kind of act. But yeah. I thought, well, I can't really get away with that age 59. So I actually threw myself into being a bit of a punk. Yeah. I even swore, Richard, at one point.
And I know you don't swear.
I don't swear, no, because I... And that's the hallmark of John Shuttleworth.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people... a lot of people like it, and because it's sort of gentle comedy anyway, but there's no... They can bring their kids.
Yeah. Well, and what was it like? I watched all three... You won Top of the Pops three times with the same song? Three different performances?
Yeah.
Three different hosts of Top of the Pops?
Yeah.
Peter Powell... Kid Jensen, we can talk about both of them till the we're allowed. You were lucky.
Like, what's the third one, I wonder?
66%, fine. So far, as far as I think we're safe with those two. Jimmy Savile, I saw introduce you, which is a you don't see that anymore. He's been expunged, but not from YouTube. You can still see him on YouTube.
He did seem very nice.
Did he?
Very nice one.
Yeah.
Oh, Jilted Johnny. Oh, one of the nice guys of pop. He seemed a lovely bloke.
Yeah, that's how he. That was his modus operandi. That's how he.
I know.
That's how he tricked people.
And I was a good-looking lad, but I wasn't quite young enough.
No.
So I was safe.
Yeah. On your website, it claims you snogged Debbie Harry. I don't know if that was. Is that true, or you gave it?
Well, snog is a bit of an exaggeration. Yeah. It was. I pecked her on the cheek.
Okay.
It was a publicity shot for the NME to show that. Jilted John finally gets his girl, kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Was there any? What was it like getting onto Top of the Pops as a? You were 17. Is that how old you were?
No, I was actually just 19.
19. But teenager still.
Hmm.
And then suddenly, I'm having an idea within 3-4 months being on Top of the Pops, following Debbie Harry. In fact, the first time you were on.
Yeah. And beating her in the charts.
Right.
And I have this, and beating ABBA as well.
Wow.
Yeah, they had Summer Night City, which is perhaps one of their worst songs.
Yeah,
it?
You were lucky.
That got to number 9. I got to number 4.
Yeah.
I was beaten by Brown Girl in the Ring. And
Boney M, you can't beat Boney M.
Summer Nights, all those massive songs.
Summer Nights, that's that. And but Dreadlock Holiday was the
one. Dreadlock Holiday, yeah.
Now, are you better than Dreadlock
Holiday? I think it was. Don't you think it's slightly better than Dreadlock Holiday? Yeah. But it was fun. It was a fun time. But I think then going back to drama school... And sort of this kind of unrequited pop star thing and having to be just normal, but then actually being treated differently by people in my year. I found it a bit weird, and I actually became quite reclusive for a while, and also felt I had to start writing songs like mad and sort of follow it with the follow-up, not realising that that song was such a weird standalone song. You couldn't really follow it.
No. Well, and it's, you know, you're playing a cat. It's just a strange thing, isn't it? And it's not, you didn't plan it. It wasn't like...
No,
it
didn't really.
It wasn't like a record company going, let's get this guy and do this. You know, you've created this thing.
Well, it was done as a bit of a joke, and in exactly the same way with John Shuttleworth, which, you know, don't want to come onto that now, but I was mucking about with listening to really bad demo tapes. I was trying to be a serious songwriter, and I'd signed this publishing deal with Chapel Music because the acting work had kind of dried up. After drama school, I did a couple of years of acting, doing okay, you know. I was on Coronation Street a couple of times, meeting Gail. Both times I played somebody who fancied Gail.
Right.
What's the chances of that? And I desperately want to go back on the third time, you know, to finally tie the knot or something.
Yeah, we should sort that out. But if you're method acting, that means you have to... What do you do if you're fancying Gail? You have to...
Well, I was a different character each time.
Okay.
Or was I? Maybe I was the same person who's so in love with Gail...
Comes back and gives another
crack. ...that he changed his name, changed his clothes...
Yeah, that could work.
...to try and be close to her. But no, I signed a publishing deal because I had this indie album out called Love at the Hacienda.
Yeah.
I was in Manchester for about 10 years and that did okay, and I got this publishing deal and was... trying to write all these sort of indie pop songs, very soulful. And basically I got completely waylaid by hearing these awful demos that said that people would send in. And they were just so funny. You'd be like a guy playing a keyboard and you could hear his wife washing up in the background. You know? And they'd say at the end of the tape, well, thank you very much for listening to my songs. Please get in contact if there's anything you want to change. Isn't that sad, you know? Anything you want to change, I'm more than happy to, you know. And yet, there was a real kind of human element to them.
Yeah.
And the A&R guys listening to them were obviously far more obsessed with those than listening to the latest Madonna single or something. So what I did for a joke, I went home and I made my own spoof, right. Bad demo tape, sent it in to Chapel Music. And then a few days later, I sort of met, have you had any tape? They realised it was me, but they, after a while, and they just said, it was fantastic, we want more.
Right.
So I had to do another tape. And suddenly all my serious love songs just got completely forgotten about.
Yeah.
And I had to come up with these comedy tapes.
Right.
And I did that for a couple of years and then started even doing gigs. I supported Robert Plant. Yeah. How weird is that? When he brought Big Log out, I was at the Marquee. I was the comedy support. And in those
days...
Did
that work? Because that often doesn't work, does it? The people are waiting for a big famous star and then someone comes
No, it didn't work.
No.
It didn't work at all. But I supported Robert Plant, I can say that.
Yeah.
Could be on my tombstone. He was a very nice man.
Okay.
Very nice. But I kind of then jacked John Shuttle within.
Right.
Because it wasn't really going anywhere. It wasn't deep enough. It needed fleshing out.
Yeah.
So I went back and did some acting in Newcastle under Lyme.
Right.
For about a year, had a bit of fun doing pantomime and Romeo and Juliet. I played Tybalt, and my dagger flew off and bounced. It was in the round, and the dagger flew and hit the back wall.
Oh my God.
And ricocheted back and caught an audience member on the knee.
Oh my goodness.
And why they didn't sue the theatre, I don't know.
Because, you know, people didn't do that in those days, did they?
But then I went back to doing Shortworth, yeah.
Yeah.
And then haven't stopped.
And so how did you know about the comedy circuit at that stage? Or when did you start doing it in Edinburgh? Or were you doing it at clubs and stuff before?
No, I was doing it kind of more in music venues.
Yeah.
I even supported Jonathan Richman and Dodgy at one point.
Right.
And they were good. They were good.
Okay.
But no, the comedy thing really started when I came back with it. And I met a guy called Steve Finan, who was the son of Tom O'Connor.
Oh.
That's shut you up.
Yeah.
And he was a lovely man, Steve. I think he went on to manage All Saints.
Okay.
And marry a famous athlete. But so I didn't take up his offer of representation, foolishly. But he took me around the comedy clubs of London. And I met John Hegley and people like that, and Jenny Eclair and Donna McPhail. You know, you remember those names from when you were starting out. And it was suddenly a different world of... it was a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
But there were very few character comedians out there, but I can't think of any, because they weren't really tolerated in a sort of stand-up situation.
Well, it was weird. This is the mid to late 80s, right? So...
Yeah, late 80s, early 90s now we're talking. Yeah.
So, you know, it became much more... In the sort of early 80s, there was quite a lot of speciality acts, but they wouldn't be characters, really. And then the 90s became a lot more men... with microphones doing jokes, really.
Yeah, that's the scenario I would entered. That's the arena that I entered. And so I struggled with quite a lot of my early shuttle with gigs. And I soon found out that I had to kind of point up what the character was early on. Otherwise, they thought he was a real bloke.
He was
a shit performer. So I had to say, can I slip into John?
Yes,
briefly?
Please do.
Sure, the audience would like. I'd say, I made a demo of my tapes, and I sent it to Paul Young, but I forgot to put Dalby on, so it was a bit hissy. It was too hissy for him, you know, so he sent it me back. So it had to have a really sort of obvious kind of audio joke early on, and then the audience went, hang on, this guy isn't for real, it's a comedy act.
Right. And so you took that to Edinburgh and you were nominated for the Perrier, it would have been then, was it, still?
Yeah, I had the 92 was a very good year.
Yeah, it was a strong year.
I fell under the patronage of Vic and Bob.
Yes.
They started coming to all my gigs and Miles Hunt from the Wonder Stuff and all that sort of crowd. And I was suddenly very trendy. And I think I was destined to either win the Perrier or or come second behind Steve Coogan and John Thompson, which is... possibly what happened.
You know that year, what I've heard about that year, because it was a very strong group of nominees, and I think if you looked at all of them, you'd go, wow, they've all pretty
Mark
much...
Mark Thomas.
Yeah, they've all
Joe
done
Brand. Well. Yeah, they've all done pretty
And well. I think Steve Coogan was everybody's second choice and nobody's first choice. So I think everyone.
Is that true?
Yeah, but because it was so strong. That's what I heard about it. It might not be true. It might be an apocryphal tale. But you know, if everyone's can't agree, if everyone's got different first place and everyone's got the same second place, then the second place wins on points. Without anyone coming first.
No, I was sort of riding high and probably quite cocky and. You know, Saturday Zoo, Jonathan Ross wanted me to do their series. So I came back from Edinburgh and I fulfilled an old engagement at the TNC2, Town and Country Club, in Highbury Corner. And I think I forgot the bit about, I've sent my tape to Paul Young, a bit hissy. I forgot it. And after about 10 minutes, the audience started talking. Because they didn't know who I was. I'd done well in Edinburgh, but... Yeah. This was just a sort of chicken in a basket audience, you know. And, I bombed completely. And that was a bit of hubris for me, realising that you've got to set it up and you can never assume you're going to go down well, can you, Richard?
You can't. And
think it's awful.
You can't. You know. And what's interesting, right, you've been doing this character a long time, so you were about mid-20s when you first started doing John, is that
right? Yeah, I was. That's a scary thing.
And now you're the same age as...
Now I'm older than John.
Now you're older than...
John Shuttleworth, I can't make him 60. I think he's about 58.
Right. 59,
indeterminate late 50s.
Okay.
When I started him, I was 25.
Right.
26. He was 46.
Right.
So he's aged very slowly.
Aged slow and you've aged quickly. And now as a man of that age, do you look back at the younger you and resent him for... I mean, it was never cruel or mean, was it?
No, you can't resent Johnny because he's a very foolish, but a very sweet man, I think. Yeah. I've just suddenly realised he's got a West Highland Terrier that's about 38 years old. doing well.
Is that... There was a great... there was a great edition of Viz. One of my favourite things that was ever in Viz was about Clive Dunn becoming the same age as the character he played in that time, because obviously he was much younger when he actually did it. And it's the day that he became the same age as his character was meant to be. It's kind of this. They did a very funny article about that, but there's something kind of poetic and sort of wonderful and tragic about it, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I mean, what started as a joke became a living, and you know, the radio, particularly. I had so many radio series. I've had about 12 radio series, and just done a Christmas special. In fact, it's quite weird coming out on a stage because I've just spent 3 weeks in a wardrobe. Working on my Christmas radio special. The reason for that is that I'm spending a lot of my time in Leicester now where my girlfriend lives, and there was no recording studio there, so there's a walk-in wardrobe, and the acoustic was quite good. But then it actually, the sound wasn't... In rush hour, the cars were... The bass was too strong. So I went into the bedroom... And I made my studio by putting a row of coats and dresses to baffle the sound.
Right.
And that's what I love about radio, is that you can actually record anywhere.
And you make those radio... So are you making all those radio shows completely on your own and then you send them off? And
Is that it?
So you produce them? And because obviously you're doing several voices.
I do, yeah. And
doing all the characters.
I don't actually produce them. That's Dawn Ellis. It used to be Paul Schlesinger.
I know Dawn,
You know Dawn?
I know Dawn, yeah.
Do you know Paul?
I do know Paul Schlesinger.
Who don't you know?
It's hard for me to say that. But no, they were very much there. I think Dawn was a PA when I started at Light Entertainment Radio. Yeah.
No, the way I do my radio is a bit unusual. I have a multi-track tape recorder, and for people who don't know the Shuttleworths, it's all the characters. It's John, his wife, her friend Joan Chitty, and John's next door neighbour and soul agent Ken Worthington, and it's really those four mainly.
Yeah.
And I do all the voices, and the ladies' voices I do with vary speed, by recording slower and then playing it back at normal. About 9% for Mary, and only 5% for Joan, because she talks like that. It's quite raspy. Weirdly, Ken Worthington. The agent, he talks like that. Hello. I used to use vary speed,
right?
Because when I started doing him, his voice was hello, I'm Ken Worthington. It was much lower, and I thought, well, let's speed him up, and then there'll be more of a contrast with John. So after a while, I realised actually I can just make his voice higher. I basically record the characters one track at a time.
Okay.
And then go back. And so I do a bit of John. Hello, Richard. How are you going? Are you all right? And then I'll go back and I'll play that back and record on Ken's track. So he'll be hearing, hello, Richard. How are you? And, excuse me, John.
Yeah.
It's my chance to interview Richard. Then I'll go back onto John's track and drop in, as we say in the trade, at the point that I want John to pick up the conversation. Yeah. Excuse me, Ken. Don't interrupt me when I'm talking to Richard. Then Mary might come. You know, it's fun. It's like sculpting. It really is. And so, and sometimes I have to pull the clay off and remould it because it's gone wrong.
Yeah.
So I have to wipe the stuff I've done.
I mean, no one else is doing anything quite like that, though. You know what I mean? I think you've come from a different background with that character anyway. It was always, as you say, it was very different than anything anyone else was doing. But that's, you know, no other radio show is made in that way.
I know. I should get an award, but I've never have.
No.
Well, I got shortlisted for the Sony Award, but... it's my method acting coming in. It has to... I just think it's... I remember when I started doing radio, I used to listen to, like, The Archers and other radio shows, and I could just see the actors at the mic with their scripts, you know. Oh, hello, how are you today? It's so Stilton.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was a big fan of Mike Lee. I still am, but in the 70s, he did a lot of TV dramas that I absolutely loved, like Abigail's Party and Nuts in May, Who's Who, Grown Ups. And the acting was at times incredible and naturalistic. And it slipped more now into modern TV production and radio. But I wanted to imitate the way people really speak, because when you speak, you don't know what your next phrase is going to be. So there's a certain rhythm that you get, and you cannot, no actor, how, no matter how good, could not read and make it sound completely like he's making it up.
Sure.
So I make it up.
Yeah.
All the lines you hear in a John Shuttleworth radio show, it's completely, I have an idea of where I'm going,
yeah,
you know, but I do make it up on the
that's
hoof, and,
yeah,
and that's where you get the ebb and flow of real conversation.
Yes,
and people interrupt at points,
yeah,
that in a script, if two actors are acting together with a written script, they cannot possibly interrupt each other in that naturalistic way.
No, it's fascinating stuff, and it's a brilliant character. I remember one of the first time, I can't remember why you gave me a check for £5. I don't know if I'd sold you something.
No, I can tell you the story.
What was it?
You might think Richard's a really hard, cynical man, but, reading your Twitter, you come over as quite, you know.
Yeah, I'm harsh. I'm nasty, am I?
But
yeah.
Years ago, I remember being in London and I was at a cash point and my card wouldn't work and I needed some money. And who should I see walking along but Richard Herring? And I told him about my problem, and you went into your pocket and you took out a fiver and you gave me the fiver.
Yeah.
Why didn't you give me a tenner?
Probably. That was probably, if it was the early 90s, that was absolutely all I would have had. I was a huge fan of John Shuttleworth. No. You sent me a check and a badge, knowing full well that I would put that in.
Did you not
cash it? I never cashed it. So you got £5 off of me, and that's it. I kept the check. I put it behind a little glass thing and put it up on my wall.
I've spent the £5 now. but I thought that was a very... I didn't know you terribly well. I thought it was quite a nice gesture.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
I'd forgotten what a wonderful person I was. I just remembered thinking, I never got that fiver back because I never cashed that. Too late to cash it now. I won't be able to cash it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
But no, it was. I mean, it was. It was an extraordinary, and still is an extraordinary character. But it was very exciting to see that and to see that development. There were, I guess, similarly to Simon Munnery, maybe again, who was a few years behind you with Alan Parker, who he's also resurrected him, yeah. 30 years on. But he was the only other person. I started trying to do characters when I came to London, and I could never make it work.
You had to pick your venues carefully, yeah. Because certain clubs, particularly where they served food while you were watching comedy, Jongleurs comes to mind.
Yeah,
you had to avoid because they want to, dick jokes, don't they?
They do. Is it still like that?
I don't know because I just don't. I'm not in. I feel I'm a little bit of a fraud. I'm not really in the world of comedy anymore, and I've forced myself to start watching new stuff that's cutting edge.
Yeah,
is it Stuffy Let's Flats?
Yes.
Does anyone
like
know that?
Definitely.
See, I am cutting edge.
You are. You're far ahead of these.
But it's Channel 4, you know. It's the kind of new wave of comedians coming in with...
Again, I think a lot of those people, a lot of people now are coming in from unusual areas, and I think that's partly because stand-up becomes... it does become a bit homogenised if you're not careful, and there's so many people trying to do stand-up that a lot of people coming through, I think like that guy, Jamie Dimitriou.
Yeah,
I don't think he was a stand-up. He was more of an actor again, and obviously Fleabag is from someone who's written a play, and Chewing Gum again, same thing, coming from a drama background. So it's interesting that your stuff comes from a drama background as well, and that was there is a place in comedy for that.
Well, it's the same with Steve Coogan. I remember chatting with him, and he tried to get acting work, and he couldn't, and he used to go around the clubs doing impersonations, and that's how he made his living, and then. He invented a few characters and he went up to Edinburgh. But it was indicative of the times because, actors just weren't getting the work. And so they would form a little comedy group or a variety. That's how you used to get your equity card, which you needed back then. That's another reason I did Jilted John, was to get my equity card. Right. You had to do 5 gigs and then you got your card. So it makes sense that a lot of actors turn to comedy because it's more fruitful.
Sure.
Thing.
And I'm interested in quite a lot of your jobs, and I'm quite interested. You went back to being. Did you genuinely try to become a milkman, sort of after you were doing John Shuttleworth? So between the creation and the sort of success of it.
It was a time when I was pretty depressed because my mum had died, sort of mid '80s, and I moved to London, and I was in this very destructive relationship with this girl, and she sort of followed me down. And anyway, I won't go into that. But it was like I had low self worth, Richard. And being pretty depressed. I went to see a psychiatrist. I packed in doing John Shuttleworth because that wasn't going anywhere. The acting work wasn't happening. Nobody wanted my mournful love songs. So I went to see a shrink, and after about 5 sessions, I suddenly had this. Moment where I thought, I know what I want to do. I want to be a milkman.
Yeah,
that's what I want to do with my life. Because I think at the time it was I wanted to help the community.
Right.
And so
people need milk, don't they?
Pardon?
The people need milk.
They do need milk.
And they need someone to bring it.
I can't stand milk. I'm a soya man now. Oat milk.
I thought you got into trouble for drinking the milk off the float. That might be the reason you don't like milk now.
I did drink the milk off the float. You had to. You expended so much energy rushing around because they made you go quite fast that I on average, between 5 and 7 pints a day, I would steal from the float. But after about 3 months, I stopped whistling. I hadn't had a single glimpse of negligee.
No.
I mean... I just got a few old guys sort of saying, oh, have you got time for a cup of tea, Milky? This is down in London I was living. And I would usually say, no, because I was behind, because I had other people's rounds because they were on holiday, so I didn't have my own round. I was like a relief milkman, so
okay.
I couldn't do the round, and then I'd, by the end of a week I'd learnt it, and then they came back off the holiday all tanned and took the round back off me. So, but I said, you know, I said no to these old guys that wanted a cup of tea and a chat.
Yeah.
So I realised with hindsight I wasn't helping the community at all.
You weren't, were you?
I was a selfish twat who just was depressed and didn't know what to do right. with my life. So I got a job. I got a job in a theatre, like in Manchester. I think the Happy Pills were working, and I went for an interview, and I got a job. So suddenly I was back in theatre land.
I think, but that happens. I mean, it does happen a lot to actors. I think being an actor is such a, it's a, it's such a difficult thing. It's that thing. It's the confidence combined with, you know, that there's obviously something shy about a lot of actors as well. So there's that two opposing things, and then you've got no control over your life, and so you've got those highs and lows. You can be on Top of the Pops, you can be on Coronation Street, and then you can have nothing to do for 2 years.
Yeah, I know, it was terrible. That's why it's so nice to have a character like John that I can sort of put away when I'm fed up of it, and then I can dust him down as I'm about to. I'm just about to go on a... having sort of hinted that I was going to retire, I'm not. The show is called John Shuttleworth's Back, and it's about his bad back. Clever. I always like a bad pun in my show titles.
Yes, of course.
My favourite is probably The Minotaur
and
Other Mythological Creatures. But, yeah, I'm going to be touring everywhere, including Hull. I'm coming to the Hull truck in, I think, March. And it's a big tour. And
you've written a book. I've written a book,
A book. Well, it's only my second book. You've probably had about 10 out, haven't you?
Well, I've written a lot myself. You know, they can't stop you. If you just put them out yourself, no one says, no, hold on. But I've done a few, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is only my second book.
Yeah.
And I had one out when I had a series, my only series called 500 Bus Stops. And I did a big tour of Waterstones bookshops and everything, signing. And I sold very few. It was amazing. I don't know why. So I'm hoping I'll sell a few more. I'm really pleased with it. It's called... Two Margarines and Other Domestic Dilemmas. The Two Margarines refers to one of John Shuttleworth's best-known songs where he says, two margarines on the go, it's a nightmare scenario, which is about the familiar problem of finding two open tubs of margarine in your fridge. And so it's basically the day in the life of John Shuttleworth. He goes around looking... trying to find all the domestic dilemmas and solving them. But, of course, being John Shuttleworth, he solves them really badly. And they're all stupid. Like, how to avoid tripping up over the dishwasher door.
Yeah.
That's quite a serious problem.
That is a bit. I walked into mine the other day just at breakfast.
Yeah, well, his solution to that is you can't
avoid
that's it. That's one of the unsolvable ones.
Yeah.
Which is probably why world leaders never discuss it.
Yeah. It hurts as well, doesn't it? If you do
it bloody does
it
hurt,
does,
yeah.
It gives you a nasty crack, just at the right level.
But, I don't know about you, Richard, but one of the joys for me of this job is it's a bit like... See, I always wanted to be something like a carpenter or a plumber, you know, something honourable that is where you learn a skill and then you practice it. And I feel... Because my dad is sort of... I think my dad, he was proud of me. He's dead now, but... He was very practical with his hands, and I sort of wasn't. And I used to just saw and like cut my thumb or cock it up. And so to me, making CDs, making books, making tea towels. We've just had a new tea towel come up. Wooden spoons. The merchandise is almost as much fun to me as the gig. Yeah,
that's mainly what I do now. I just mainly think up ideas for merchandise, and then I've got to do the podcast just to promote them.
Yeah, well, you're doing a similar thing with the podcast. That's kind of DIY, isn't it?
So, yeah.
But have you got a wooden spoon?
I haven't even thought of doing wooden spoons. Well, but please, now you've done it, I can't copy that.
No, you can't.
I'll have to do... could do a spatula or something like that. I have got a tea towel. I did a pumpkin tea towel.
Tea towels are very popular with people. And, I mean, everyone's got too many tea towels, but they still seem to want to buy them. Great.
What do you do with your exes? I've got a big drawer of tea towels that we never use.
Well, this is it. They build just up and then eventually you can't shut the drawer.
Yeah.
Can you?
It's true.
It's terrible.
It is terrible. Let's ask you a couple of emergency questions. See what comes out early on. Have you ever seen a ghost?
The honest answer is I haven't. Okay. And I really wish I had.
Okay. But they don't exist, so don't worry.
I think they do, you see.
I don't think they do exist. Lots of people have seen them. I've heard some, you know, some very exciting stories by asking that question, but only from the more mentally ill guests, I would say. So it's that's... I'm going to keep it clean because, you know, I know you're you don't like...
This is going to be the clean podcast.
I'm going to keep it clean.
But you've got that rude Hull lass coming on after, haven't you?
Oh, she'll be rude. I will ask her as many rude things. I'll just check this.
You can't find one, can you, that's not cheeky?
I was going to ask you a Muppet one, but then I'm going to ask you another Muppet one. I'm just going to check it's not too rude. I think it's back here. It's one of there's 25 new questions in the new edition of Emergency Questions. Oh, no, that's too far back. That's why I'm not finding it.
Is this your book, then?
This is the book I wrote. This has properly been published by a proper publisher. Oh, this is it. I mean, it's a bit blue, but you don't have to... If your genitals had to be replaced by the face of one of the Muppets, the face would be able to interact and communicate in exactly the same way as the puppet. Which puppet face would replace your genitals?
Well, they're all pretty hideous, aren't they?
Yeah.
Probably Kermit.
Yeah.
Because he's quite sweet.
Yeah.
And then the girls might feel sorry for me. Is that... Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine. Would you rather have a hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispenses sun cream?
You'll have to say that again.
Would you rather... You must have been asked this 1,000 times. Would you rather have a hand made out of ham that you can eat, you can just nibble at, and it'll grow back eventually?
It grows back, yeah.
Yeah, just slowly. You know, you can't just eat it all and it grows back. It'll grow back over a month if you eat the whole thing. You won't have a hand for a month. Or an armpit that dispenses sun cream, unlimited sun cream for one person. So a lifetime.
Cream.
You know, sun cream that you put on to protect your skin from the sun. Which of those would you prefer? I mean, you're treating this as if it's a ridiculous question, I find quite offensive.
Did you think
I created that question.
You've got problems. I probably would have to. I'm almost a vegetarian, okay. But I do have a bit of ham occasionally.
But also, it's vegetarian because it's not. No animal has died for the ham hand. It's your own.
But it's meat, though, isn't it?
It is, but it's your own meat. You can't. It's not nothing.
Okay.
You're a vegetarian for reasons.
I don't have much of a need for sun cream because I take it on holiday with me and then I always forget to put it on.
Yeah.
And I find I don't get too burnt, actually.
Okay.
So the answer is the hand of.
Good. Well, thank you for answering eventually and giving it the respect it deserves.
That is the weirdest question I've ever been asked.
Good. That is my job. You won a pretty baby competition when you were a baby. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, I did. That's not out of the book, is it?
No,
you just read
that.
Yeah.
My
father was a professional photographer,
okay.
And that may have helped. But in 1960, he took a photograph of me, a really cliched picture. I was eating a bit of straw.
Okay.
I mean, that is quite cliched, isn't it? Like, a bit of straw in my mouth. And but it was in a field as well. And he sent it into the Mother and Child, which was a big magazine at the time. And it won first place, and we won a fridge.
A fridge? That's pretty good.
Which was a big
thing
to win back then, because nobody had fridges. We're talking 1960, 61, and,
How long did the fridge last?
The fridge lasted till at least till the mid-90s.
Right.
My sister had it in her flat in Halston.
Okay.
And then it broke.
But I mean, that's pretty good for a free fridge.
Yeah, fridges were very, very... important back then. I mean, they are now, but it was like a big deal.
Yeah. What did people do before fridges?
They probably cost $2,000 or something like that.
$2,000 or $3,000. Yeah. Was it massive or was it just a regular fridge size? Old fridges really big?
It was an Electrolux. It was a bit like a small American fridge. Quite nice curves on it. And,
okay.
But I was in the Daily Express.
Wow.
Page 3. Yeah.
They have different tastes, those Daily Express. It was a different time. You can't judge the people of the 50s about that. The champion mouse breeder, this is Shuttleworth's slightly come out of this, right? But your dad bred mice, did he?
No, my dad didn't breed mice.
Okay,
but
you
I was a bit of a nerdy teenager. I mean, Saturday morning for me as a 14-year-old, the most exciting thing was getting on the bus, going into the market in Sheffield, where I grew up, Castle Market, and buying a box of broken biscuits and then taking it back home and eating them in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Or going and buying a quarter of Nuttall's Mintos.
Yeah.
And eating them whilst playing with my little tape recorder, because I got into sound quite early. I used to record silly sound effects. And I was into VariSpeed early on. I used to record a baby sort of crying, and I did it by recording at half speed, and I would go... And then you play that back at twice the speed, and it sounds just like a baby.
Right.
How I chanced on that, I don't know. Because that's a bit weird, isn't it? So the mice, it was already weird, and then I just saw some mice in a pet shop, and then I bought a copy of The Fur and Feather, which was a magazine. A now defunct fortnightly magazine. Yeah, and I
did it split into The Fur and The Feather, two separate magazines. Saying, oh, we don't want the mice and the birds in the same.
It was two separate magazines.
Well, I did, but then it came together.
Yeah,
like Whizzer and Chips.
But I, but I joined the National Mouse Club.
Yeah,
and it does exist, still going. I think the whole branch is doing quite well.
Probably a few people in from that.
And I used to go to mouse shows age 15. I used to get on the bus and go to places like Keithley and Saltaire, and be in these St. John's ambulance rooms with all these old guys looking at mice, picking them up, and, oh, that's a nice mouse. Oh. Yeah. Go ahead and laugh. It is funny.
Do you still have any music?
No, I can't. But no. Funnily, when my kids were about six, I got a few more, because I moved to Louth in Lincolnshire, just down the road. It's only taken me an hour to get here. And... we met an old mouse breeder that I remember from when I was 14. And he said, oh, I've got some nice pink-eyed whites. Come and see me. So I took a few of his mice, and for about 3 months I tried to get my kids into it. But then one went a bit mad and started biting me, and I just thought, why am I doing this? I don't like I don't even like mice, you know? And I don't like mice at all. I think they're horrible.
They are pretty horrible. We went to a little petting zoo and had some. Well, my son called them mice. One of them was a rat. One of them was a chinchilla. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I don't like that. Certainly don't like gerbils. They move far too quickly.
Okay.
I like guinea pigs.
Yeah.
Have you noticed guinea pigs? And I'm slipping into John now, but they're not frightened to establish eye contact. And
I haven't noticed that about
and maintain
them.
It.
Right.
They'll always be looking at you.
Okay.
They never look away. Whereas if you try and stare a dog out, after a while the dog will just go look away and sort of look away and lick its fur and try to catch a fly. But a guinea pig will just keep looking at you.
I haven't noticed that about them, but I'm glad that's come up. you were talking backstage about kind of. You had a sort of... It wasn't exactly a breakdown, was it?
It was a breakdown.
Was a breakdown.
Well, no, it's still got... that word has connotations, doesn't it? It was memory loss, fueled by working too hard and drinking too much Guinness at night after my show. And ironically, it was a character called Dave Tordoff, who came from Ghoul. And I'll do a little bit...
You're right. And basically, we're like a Brexiteer, you know, big time. And he were,
anyway, the show was, he was a rich builder.
Yeah.
One review said he knows the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Okay.
Which I thought, that summed him up, really. He was based on a friend that I met at a school reunion who was
I'm on 28K. my daughter's a model. Here's a picture of her. I've got a Triumph Bonneville in my drive. I've got a Ford Discovery doing very, very well. Doing very well.
So he was a mason and all.
I
just thought it was a great character, and I worked hard on it, and I did a show that I took to Edinburgh, and I previewed at the Hull Truck, called Neighbours from Hull. And it was going really well, and I'd even secured a place on the Nicholas Parsons radio thing. And then... one day, halfway through the show, I just forgot what I was doing.
Right.
completely. And you said you believe in ghosts. Do you believe in tumbleweed?
Because
I bloody saw some tumbleweed. Terrible. And
well, it's a terrifying thing to have. I've only had that happen, you know, for a few moments.
Yeah.
Where you just completely... I mean, usually you know a show so well that you can run on autopilot a bit. But it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like a new show.
But you see, you're good at talking crap as well, aren't you?
I am,
you can just come out with anything. Whereas this was all finally scripted.
Sure, sure.
But it's an interesting point because as Shuttleworth, I'd had memory loss. I'd had memory loss before, but because of the nature of John Shuttleworth, he's more bumbling. And it still happens. In the middle of a song, I'll forget a lyric and I'll just have to stop the song. And then I'll go, oh, I've forgotten the words, you know. And then people laugh. And then, what was I singing about? What was I talking about? And then some kind fan will shout out, it was about, can't go back to Savory, or, you know.
Yeah.
And they'll help me out. But as this character, Dave Chordoff, was a very, very different to me. That's the thing.
Yeah.
He's a kind of a very sort of smart builder who knew the price of everything. And so it threw me, and I instinct kicked in and I recovered, got to the end of the show, but I walked off and I thought, I can't go on again. I just cannot do that show again. And I walked. I just left Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And
I mean, a lot of people feel like that in Edinburgh and don't do that. It's kind of impressive to do it. I've certainly had Edinburgh's where I felt like doing it.
Well, I just couldn't go on. And I think it was my body and my mind saying, you've been working. Because I'd just been making a film called It's Nice Up North, which was the John Shuttleworth film.
Right.
And I had 3 years editing it, and my hard drive had blown up, and I'd had all sorts of problems.
Yeah.
And I got a bit obsessed with Shetland, and I was watching a video, a sort of early Google Earth, where you could move your mouse on the computer and go up a little lane, a little country road, and then turn left, and you'd be at a dead end. And I'd sort of stop and watch that for a while, and it's a bit Van Gogh the cornfield, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was cracking up.
Yeah.
So I needed a break, and I did take a break, and then I came back, and sadly I've never really done Dave Chordoff live again, and I would love to, because he was a good character.
Yeah.
Does anyone know Dave Chordoff?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good character, isn't it? He was brilliant, you know. And my career suffered because of him. Bring him back. Yeah, well, I'd love to. I just kind of need to...
But that's a scary thing, you know. It's a scary thing to happen, and again, you hear actors having that where they dry, and then they can never go back on stage again at all.
It didn't. I mean, I'd had some hypnotherapy on that, and it worked very well. But I don't know. I'm 60 now. I am a bit lazy, and I like just doing things like walking and going to the library and reading books on philosophy, and you know, I sort of look at the world of comedy and think, well, it's not very funny, you know.
Yeah.
But
I think that's...
There's other things in life.
That's certainly true, and I think that you do come out of that tunnel a little bit as, you know, I think to become a successful comedian, I think you have to be pretty obsessed, especially now, with what you're doing, and it seems like that's all that's important in the world, and you come out the other side, you know, as a bit of an older person and realise that that's crazy. But you've got stuff there. I mean, you know, John Shuttleworth can go on forever,
yes,
and I hope it does go on forever.
I think he can, yeah.
And you've got your niche, and it's, nobody else is doing anything like that. You know, the people you've mentioned, like John Hegley, is not the same, is it? But he's doing his own thing. It's the same in that he's doing his own thing.
But it's not a million miles away from John Shuttleworth, because he has a persona,
and
it's a kind of wacky guy who comes out in these strange little phrases and reads his plays songs. So, yes, I can carry on doing John Shuttleworth and nothing else, but and then just go into the library and read philosophy books. But I've still, deep down, I have this feeling that my beautiful love songs that got rejected by Chapel Music in favour of the Shuttleworth songs are good. And I brought an album out last year called Weird Town, and it's Gideon Coe on Six Music loves it. He keeps playing a song called Diary of a Skin Bird, which... does anybody know that? Diary of a Skin Bird? Anyway.
But
it's really good.
Yeah.
And I suppose what I'm saying is I want to do my own music and write some
The music,
some good
but the,
songs.
I mean, the thing, the reason all of these, that John Wirt and John Shuttleworth worked, is because the music is really good, right? So those songs would have worked. The Jill John songs would have worked as a non-parody song, you know. I think it was funny as well, so that was the thing.
No, I think
but you're
they are
clearly
good
a great musician. But then that's a, you know, but that's so many comedians have that thing where they start doing something seriously and then the comedy version does better. So many comedians want to be rock stars.
Yes.
So if you've got that, you've got those competing things within you, that's a difficult thing to struggle with a little bit, I guess, isn't it? If you want to be taken seriously as a musical artist.
Yeah, it is hard to be taken seriously when, and I did a tour last year called Completely Out of Character,
yeah,
as myself, and there were mainly the Big Shuttleworth fans found it hardest to yes, see. People who had never seen John Shuttleworth, who just came on spec, they really loved it.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. But if you've got a reputation of doing something, then it's hard to kind of break away from that. But, you know, I'm not very precious about it. And I know John Shuttleworth is very loved. And so is Jilted John. And it's like I've created two really good characters that will be remembered for centuries. Wouldn't that be nice?
But Jilted John is, you know, it's 40, like you're saying, is it 40? It's 40 years, is that what you're
saying? It's 41 years.
41 years. I mean, that's incredible. That, and especially for something that was one song that became a hit. You know, I know you had the album, you did other stuff. But for people to still remember that fondly, I really, you know, it was so important to me that, you know, I was the right age, weren't you? Yeah, I was sort of 7 years younger than you.
But just going back to what you were saying about, because I feel, you know, it's hard to keep my drive going. What I noticed about you is that you seem immensely driven.
And yeah.
In a nice way, but how do you do that? Is that because you're just a bit younger than me, or you still got?
I think a little
bit. You've made it, or what?
Well, it's partly that. It's partly because I've got to keep feeding my kids now, but that's the separate thing, because you're sort of, well, actually I don't want to be so driven because I want to spend more time with my kids than you know, be going out on the road. So this is why this suits me. I can come and do this once a week rather than five times a week, and so I can spend more time with my kids. I think I love doing what I'm doing, and I think both of us are doing, you know, we're fortunate to have created enough of a persona or a brand, if you want to call it that, that people will still come and see it, and that we, you know, you don't need to be hugely famous. In fact, it's much better not to be hugely famous. It's much better to be, you know, and be doing what you want to do. So I love what I'm doing, I think, is the truth of it, most of it. Writing scripts, which I still do, I find really difficult as I'm doing it, but then I love it when I've finished it. And so to be in that position where you are still allowed to do the thing you love. And unusually, as a comedian, I wanted to be a comedian. I didn't want to be a rock star. Yeah. So I was, I'm not, I like fun. I like lyrics, and I like the poetry of music much more than the music itself. And so I think a lot of comedians are sort of frustrated rock stars, but I just always wanted to be a comedian. So it's, you know, I feel quite happy that this is my
job. I mean, if anything, I probably want to be a folk singer. I want to be taken seriously. A poet or something. You know?
Yeah.
I've realised actually I've written so many songs, and a lot of them, if I just read the lyrics out, it's quite a good poem.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe I'll you might see me in a pub somewhere.
But you can do it. Mean, but also the beauty of you is that, you know, your name isn't the same as your character. So you can divorce the two things and do those. You know, you can see it within the love that goes into the characters you've done and the language, The thing about John Shuttleworth is the choice of language, isn't it? But you know what I mean. It is. There's poetry in it. The reason it works, because it's not jokes, is it? I mean, there's humorous stuff in it, but it's not. It's the comedy of the mundane.
It is,
picking the mundanity and picking out the right choice of words for that, isn't it? So there's a poetry.
It is. It's fixating on sort of not much going on and the little things in life, and I think. That's why I quite like Jamie's the stuffy flats thing, and a lot of Julia Davis.
Yes, Julia Davis.
And they're all at it now. They're all kind of doing that. You know, it's the modern furrow to plough, really, isn't it? Which you don't. I mean, that's why I'm slightly disappointed with Simon Pegg, because he always. I met Simon Pegg in Bristol, and it was his very first gig.
Yeah.
And he was supporting me. And I was sort of quite well established, about 93, 94. And he seemed a nice lad. And he went on and did his... And he absolutely stormed it. He went, and then he came to London and rang me up once and said, can you give me some advice? And I probably told him a couple of clubs. And then next thing, he's a massive star making all these big films. And, and they always start off really well and well-observed. And they end up with everyone getting blown up. And I don't get that. And it's like they ran out of ideas.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting that a lot of that the career progression of an extremely successful comedian is to end up going to Hollywood and making stuff that probably isn't as good as what you would make. You know, I think Coogan, the stuff he makes himself.
Should we slag Coogan off?
No, I'm not going to slag him off. I think the stuff, you know, Alan Partridge is better than nearly any of the Hollywood films he's done. So, you know, you're aiming for that Hollywood thing and then you go and do it and then it's actually, this is quite a dull... I'm a big fan of Simon Specks and Steve Coogan's, but I think they're sort of better than the things that they end up being in that are seen as being successful.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all about perspective.
I think Steve Coogan is a very complex man. I used to know him quite well. I haven't seen him for a few years, but I think he wanted stardom.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I never wanted stardom. I just wanted to do good work.
Yeah.
And for people to appreciate that it was good.
Yeah.
But the stardom or the notoriety thing that goes with it, I'm not really interested in it.
No. Well, you know, I think when we started, I did start working with him, and I think I understood that drive to become famous or be the most successful comedian, I understand it, and there would have been a part of me that would have loved that to happen when I was 22.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think but now I'm 52, I'm absolutely so delighted.
And you realise that your kids are a bit more important than...
Yeah, only a bit. Probably only my daughter. If I could swap my son for stardom, I'd do it. But I wouldn't do both of them because the daughter's all right.
I really want to start on this bottle, but I've not finished that one. I feel bad.
It's the two pots of margarine.
We're
going to have to... We've gone on way too long. We're going to have to stop.
Okay.
So it's all right. So you can take your water off with you and keep it as a gift from me to you, as along with that £5 I gave you. Did you ever pay the bloke that let you record for £25 the extra £55 that it was £80 to... record your thing? Did you go back when you were a successful?
No, I never did. I didn't feel bad about it, but now you mention it, I feel quite bad about it. Yeah.
Would have been a nice gesture, that's all I'm saying. Would have been a nice gesture. It's fantastic to talk to you, Graham, and thanks so much for doing this. Do check out the tour and the book. Ladies and gentlemen, Graham Fellows! Thank you. We'll be back next week. Go and have a drink and a wee. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Graham Fellows, a.k.a. Jilted John, a.k.a. John Shuttleworth, and so on. Thank you very much to Pest. That's the name of the band who are playing this particular music for you. Thank you very much to everyone at Hull City Hall. Wonderful gang of people there who looked after us really well. Thank you also to my producer, George Lingford. George, the incompetent Sandman, he's moved up to production. Thank you to the series producer, Ben Walker. This is a Fuzz Go Faster Strike.com and Sky Potato production. Why not head to GoFasterStrike.com, buy some Emergency Questions books, some Rehearsals for Top Trumps, whatever you fancy, my friends. There's downloads, there's books, there's all the work of many fantastic comedians there for you to peruse and enjoy. See you next time on Rahulastapa. Hooray!
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.